Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Preds TV analyst Chris Mason coming up at 8:30. We'll break down game one with him. Look ahead to game two as well. What adjustments would we like to see the Predators make? All that coming up later this hour. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us to begin the 9 o'clock hour as well. So all that coming up today as well as taking your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And as we do every day this week at 8 o'clock, we've got some tickets to give away for the Nashville Predators and their home playoff games. Game 3 tickets to give away today, a pair of tickets with a trivia question by our very own Ryan Porth. If you know the answer to this trivia question, be the first texter at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth, what is today's trivia question for a chance to win a pair of tickets to Game 3 coming up on Friday?
It's the first texter.
Yes.
Not caller.
Yes.
Or person to tweet in or whatever. So the first texter to the text line. So looking at Preds playoff history, Philip Forsberg last night scored his 27th career playoff goal for the Preds, which is by far first all-time in playoff history for the Preds in goal scored. There are two Predators tied for second on that list with 14 goals in their playoff history with the Nashville Predators. Which two players are tied for second behind Philip Forsberg?
So which two Predators players in playoff history are tied for second in goals behind Philip Forsberg? If you know that answer, text into the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The first person who correctly guesses the answer will win a pair of tickets to Game 3 between the Predators and the Hurricanes coming up on Friday. So we'll update you on that a little bit later. Get those texting fingers going if you know the answer to today's trivia question. Joe, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Eamon from Franklin, who wants to weigh in. Eamon, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Thank you for having me, guys. I just wanted to talk really quickly about kind of the discrepancy behind the way that we're looking at play of the first pair, who obviously they made a lot of mistakes last night, but I feel like there's some warranted discussion about the play of the bottom pairing, too. I'm not going to be too hard on them. They're bottom pairing. They're not out there to light it up or anything, but I think we saw the difference in foot speed between these two teams exploited pretty heavily on that bottom pair. I think Eric Branson's probably a wonderful presence in the locker room, and he does a lot of things that this team likes, but it might be ideal in this matchup to play somebody like Matt Benning on the bottom pair rather than him because he's got the foot speed to compete along the outside. We saw Harper get burned pretty badly a couple of times too. So I think that's where John Hines should maybe make his easiest lineup changes, is put some people in there who can deal with guys going wide along the wing with speed. I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Hey, thanks for the call. I mean, we appreciate it. I mean, I think that's a great point. I think that was obvious at times last night too, that the foot speed Carolina has was a problem, especially for that third pairing. I mean, we talked about that third goal by Niederreiter where Harper's kind of pinching up. He's trying to shut the play down at the blue line, and he just gets torched on the play. Gudbranson's late coming over. He doesn't take away the shot. He doesn't take away the pass. Saros somehow makes the save on that shot by Trocheck, and then the rebound comes. Five Predators are sitting there watching the play, and all of a sudden it's 3-2. Nino Niederreiter scores the goal. Joe, I think that's something that you've got to be mindful of if you're the Predators here. Yes, you want to be physical, and you want to be able to be difficult to play against, but you've also got to have the foot speed to not just get torched going wide like the Predators did a couple of times last night. That's a very tough balance to try to figure out. But again, I go back to if you're going to try to trot, you know, Ben Harper and Eric Gudbranson out there, to me, the more ideal time to do that is when you're at home and you can better control the matchups rather than having Sebastian Aho just skate past Ben Harper like he's not even there, like we saw in the third period last night.
Yeah, no, I think that's all fair. And look, I don't know that a Benning Fabro or whatever combination you want to come up with for the third pairing is going to make a difference last night. I mean, it's just like, again, to the point of the car, it's a third pairing. You're trying to steal ice time and not get exposed, you know, with those guys. Most teams, that's the position they're in. And so I mean, I think for Preds fans, Favreau, of course, is it's to a lesser extent of Tolvanen. It's like, wait a minute, this is one of our young, promising players. Why is he not in the lineup? You know, like what is like you want to see guys like that who you hope are going to be part of this franchise for a long time to be involved, especially 2 years after Favreau was actually a revelation in a series against Dallas. It was fresh out of college. But I don't know that is going to make any difference either. I would agree with you that, you know, when you have last change, you can control that a little bit better. And then you can maybe get some of that physicality you want of those guys without really paying for it as much. So that's another interesting choice for John Hines here. And I don't know what's going on with Favreau exactly, but I was not terribly surprised that he was not part of this lineup.
I wasn't surprised either, but that is concerning that we've reached this point with Dante Favreau where Ben Harper and Eric Goodbranson are starting game one of a playoff series. And Dante Favreau is not a part of it. Now, I realize there have been some injuries that have happened recently, and I don't know if he's back up to full speed at this point. But I think it's concerning that we sit in Dante Favreau in his second full season in the NHL, but his third playoff run with this team is not a part of the lineup as game one begins. To me, that's concerning not only for him now in the present, that's also concerning about what is the future going to look like with Dante Favreau, who we thought was going to be a pretty massively important piece of this organization as they move forward here. He's 22 years old, so it's not like, you know, you just have to totally give up on him at this point. But I do think it's pretty concerning that game one has come and gone and Favreau's not in the lineup.
And by the way, you know, not to pour salt in anyone's wound, but I thought Sam Girard looked all right last night.
He's pretty good.
I was watching that game.
He's pretty good.
Oh, boy. Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah, it's still very early. And it's like with Tolvanen, we're sitting there before the season starts saying, man, is Tolvanen ever going to figure it out? Wait, how old is he? Oh, he's 21. Yeah, and he has. And then, you know, he's had this setback recently, and we'll see. But I still think overall there's a very positive trend here with Tolvanen, as far as a guy who could actually be a long-term key player. Yeah, I think you have to be a little bit questioning that with Favreau at this point, but still very young. Probably would be really good for him to be able to get into this lineup and do something positive. But if you're John Hines, I mean, you're not making choices right now to help a player – develop for the future or whatever. You're trying to win a hockey game any way you can figure it out.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Adam from North Carolina, who wants to weigh in. Adam, just for clarification's sake, you are a Predators fan, right?
Yeah, bro.
There we go.
I moved here a couple of years ago. I'm a native Nashvilleian and Preds fan. First thing, like, let me tell you, like, I don't believe anything coming out of Carolina. Like, that game was not sold out. Like, there were tickets available from the box office like hours before the game. But anyways, I thought we looked a little nervous. We saw Forsberg kind of whiff on a couple passes, a couple shots even. Josi on, it was one of the early power plays in the first period, was trying to, you know, get into the zone. I think it was at our blue line.
Yep.
Just whiffed on a pass. I thought we were kind of squeezing the stick a little bit, and I expect us to kind of settle down, get into our game in game two, and grind it out. Like, we don't have the horses. We don't have, you know, we're gonna win this series with X's and O's. You know, we don't really have the Jimmys and Joes to go toe to toe with Carolina. We're going to grind it out if we're going to win the series. We might be able to, like, outclass them for one game, but I don't think we're going to win four doing that. Have a good one, boys.
Hey, thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it. I mean, I think to Adam's point there, like, if you're trying to just go the lineup and go toe-to-toe and trade chances with Carolina and go skill-on-skill, this is going to be a very short series. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. Now, there's a balance to that. It can't be. I still think last night's lineup – was a mistake. I mean, you can't just go all physical either. You've got to have a balance there. But to Adam's point, like if you're trying to line up and just go skill for Carolina, this is not going to work out very well for the Predators. And I don't know if it was nervousness or not, but I mean, Josi flubbed the puck a couple of times. Forsberg did coming into the zone one time as well. I mean, I don't know if it was the ice conditions or what it was, but it was strange, the Predators mishandling the puck a couple of times early in that game, and then it seemed to settle down a little bit as the game went on.
Maybe we can be like Pittsburgh media and, blame their crappy ice.
Maybe so.
You know, these hockey newbies in Carolina with their bad ice.
Don't know how to make a proper ice sheet. Yeah.
Should we also be like Pittsburgh and blame them for pumping in crowd noise?
Maybe so. Instruments of crime.
Instruments of crime.
Adam doubted the crowd there. So, I don't know. They seemed all right. They seemed okay to me, but that's interesting on the tickets thing. I saw some Preds fans in there.
Yeah.
Sounded loud and definitely looked close to 100% in the lower bowl.
Ryan Porth, do we have an update on today's trivia question? Is there a winner to go to game three of the first round?
We do have a winner, and not many people got this correct.
I didn't get it correct.
So the trivia question was, Forsberg leads the Preds in all-time playoff goals with 27. There are two players tied at 14 behind him. Who are the two players? And Evan in Nashville correctly guessed James Neal and Ryan Johansson as the two at 14 behind Philip Forsberg.
James Neal and Ryan Johansson. I think my guess was David Legwand and Shea Weber. So 0 for 2 for Robbie Stanley in that guess.
Good job.
Very nicely done. Congratulations, Evan. Hope you enjoy game three coming up on Friday. Very good trivia question by Ryan Porth. We'll have more tickets to give away each day at 8 o'clock this week here on Robbie and Rexford. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Predators. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexford here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
The Carolina Hurricanes get three third-period goals and win game one by a 5-2 score.
The third period wasn't really our strongest period. I thought we started off the game pretty good. Then second period, we kind of sat back a much couple penalties that kind of got our momentum off. And that's something that we obviously need to do a better job of, taking too many penalties. And Killers are doing a great job, but they're killing too much. So that's something that we need to improve on going forward. But then the third, I feel like we had a couple chances, but we didn't get that pushback that we wanted, especially after their first one.
That was Philip Forsberg after the game last night, a 5-2 loss for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes. Discussing the penalties taken last night, and Joe, it was, I thought as that game went along, kind of playing with fire a little bit. Some tripping penalties, some holding penalties, hooking penalties, a little bit of stick discipline that was a problem last night. Forsberg had a high sticking penalty as well. So not really penalties that you credit to being overly physical or anything like that, more stick fouls that you've got to find a way to control as you move forward here if you're the Predators, because even though the penalty kill did a great job last night, I thought they were really good against that Carolina power play, that's not really a game you want to continue to play against Carolina, a top three team, not only in the penalty kill in the regular season, but the power play as well. So good job by the penalty kill last night, but Joe, if they continue to take as many penalties as they did, probably not going to like the end result of that at the end of this series.
No, eventually they'll make you pay. And that was a natural question that Jared asked the question, and nothing wrong with the question for the record, Jared, good job. But I mean, I think John Hines answered it. I mean, these were not over exuberant physicality penalties. I mean, at least a couple of them were you got beat and you had to, commit. I mean, Josi got beat and I don't even remember who the heck that was, but he had to grab him.
I think it was Brock
to stop
McGinn.
Him from,
yeah.
It was McGinn. That's right. McGinn had a few bursts on them last night. So it was not the, this big burly lineup is going overboard stuff. It was a couple bad luck penalties in there. Like you will get. And some of it was just like, oh, there goes fill in player's name, and you're going to have to do something to slow him down.
Now, having said that, the lineup was a big topic of discussion last night, both before the game when the warm-ups were out there and the lineup was announced, and also after the game as well. You have Eli Tolvanen and out. You have Gudbranson and Harper on the third pair. Olivier back in the lineup, and Tanner Janot moving up to the third line. Joe, what did you think of the lineup decisions last night for the Predators? Do you think that had any factor whatsoever in terms of the Predators losing in Game 1?
I have a bigger concern. We're going to talk about the third pairing, and I think it merits a look. But I have a bigger concern about Josi and Ellis. There's a lot of talk about Tolvanen. Again, I think that deserves a look. But I have a bigger concern that the second line did absolutely nothing. You know, so I'm not saying there's nothing to it. There's something to it. But if you honestly watched that 60-minute hockey game and came away thinking, man, Benning, Fabro, and Tolvanen would have made all the difference, I have to question what you were looking at. You know, it's one of those things, one of those two things being true. I don't think it was the ideal lineup, and I think it needs to be changed. But I think the key guys in this lineup who we know are going to be in no matter what, they've got to change. They've got to play better.
Well, I think so too. I did have a problem with the lineup in terms of, I think at some point you can go kind of too far one direction. And I thought the Predators lineup, I looked at it in the bottom six, especially last night. And I thought to myself, all right, so where are the scoring threats going to come from? Like who's going to be out there that consistently you feel good about this line can be a scoring threat? Now, they did get a goal last night from the bottom six. Eric Halla scores a goal last night. I thought he played pretty well for the most part. Apparently, he's public enemy number one in Raleigh, North Carolina, which we didn't know about heading into this series, but now we do. So we'll see what happens on that front in Game 2. So I didn't love the lineup last night. I've made my thoughts on the Harper-Gudbranson pairing pretty clear at this point. I don't think there's any excuse for Eric Gudbranson to be in the lineup. I don't really think that there's any excuse for Harper to be in the lineup other than I'm not sure anybody else can play the left side. So that may just be what you're stuck with at this point. So I did not like the decision to put Eric Gudbranson in there. But to your point, I also didn't come away from that game last night thinking to themselves, well, the lineup is why they lost the game. Carolina just showed that they were the better team in the second part of that game. And if you're the Predators, I do think there will be some lineup changes heading into Game 2. How many? I don't know. I mean, at some point this series, you're going to see Eli Tolvanen. I'm pretty confident in saying that. Like, I don't foresee a way that he's just going to be out this entire series. So you're going to see him at some point, whether that's Game 2 or somewhere else down the line. But I don't think that bringing in a guy like Fabro or bringing in somebody like Tolvanen just automatically makes all the difference as they move forward here. They've got to find a way to get out of their zone a little bit better. They've got to find a way to disrupt that forecheck of Carolina. And as we know, if you've watched Carolina play this year, that is a whole lot easier said than done. And Joe, I think you described it earlier. The game last night started to look a whole lot more like the six games that we saw in the regular season. It looked much more like that than it did the last two we saw to close out the regular season for the Predators against Carolina. And that, to me, is very concerning as they move forward here throughout the rest of this series.
Exactly. I mean, look, I would say that like a Benning makes sense, a little bit more foot speed, right? I do think Tolvanen, the case for Tolvanen is just that Tolvanen can do some things that not everybody can do. I think watching that game last night, I just can't envision a bunch of 2-1 games coming up here.
No.
You know? And if that's not the case, then I think you've got to have every bit of firepower you can have, even if you're sacrificing something else. You know, you could make a case for like a Brad Richardson, who I thought, you know, played well when he came off injury. That's who I thought actually was going to be on that third line. And he went with Tanner Janot. I didn't have a problem with Janot. I thought Janot like did well. Janot's played well every night out for this team. But is that what you need? You know, do you need to try to have more skill? And especially, as you pointed out earlier in the show, Robbie, if you're going to play Matt Duchene that sparingly. Like, and then, you know, Granlund in that line is going to create and generate nothing. Man, like, how are you keeping up on the scoreboard?
Well, I mean, it got to a point last night where it just kind of felt like if it wasn't going to be Forsberg from the forward group, then it wasn't going to be anybody. And that's what we saw from this team earlier in the season, and that's not a good way to play. I mean, you don't have a big margin for error if you're the Predators against Carolina. I thought Forsberg looked pretty good last night for the most part. That Joe Faline, I mean, they had their moments. So there's still another level that they're going to have to get to. I guess the question now is, how much different does the lineup look in Game 2? And if you have a bad game, which I think we all would agree that Granlund line did not look good, they've been dynamite coming down the stretch for this Predators team. Like, how much patience does John Hines show here with Yarncroke, Granlund, and Cunning? Because I agree with you. I thought they were largely invisible last night. And I don't know if I would just break them up right away, but you're also in a 7-game series. Like, you can't exercise a ton of patience either.
Right. And sorry, that was Quinn barking in the background.
It's okay.
Well, and that's the thing. They've been so good, so consistently good. I think it would be a little bit panicky to break it up after one game. But I have to say, like, after that game, that's one of the first things I thought of was, gosh, they look like this looks like the classic, here's what we are in the regular season,
yeah,
and now here's what we are in the postseason. And there's been just too much of that for the Preds in general over the last few years, where you're something here, and now you get into the playoffs and you disappear.
102.5 The Game will be on the road with your chance to win tickets for games 3 and 4 for round run of the playoffs for the Hurricanes and the Preds. Tomorrow, Stillman and Company will be broadcasting live at the new Party Foul location in Cool Springs from 2 to 6 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to game 4. And on Thursday, Stillman and Company will be broadcasting live at Social Furniture from 2 to 6 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to game 3 and a pair to game 4 as well. So make sure you're tuned in all week long for that. Stillman and Company's got you covered tomorrow and on Thursday as well. When we come back, we'll be joined by Preds TV analyst Chris Mason. We'll break down game 1, look ahead to game 2 with him. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor and by Smoky Mountain Tops. C. Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Not too bad. How you guys doing?
We are doing wonderful. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. See, Mace, obviously a tough loss for the Predators last night, behind the 8-ball now in the series against the Hurricanes. What stood out to you from the Predators' standpoint in game 1?
Well, I just felt that they couldn't keep them in the type of game that they wanted to long enough. And, you know, that's going to be an issue with, you know, the speed of Carolina and the way that they are able to break out of their own zone. I don't think the Predators were able to really initiate enough of the forecheck and attack, and I think it's a lot of time is because they spent too much time defending. So by the time they get the puck out of the zone, they've got to chip it in and go for a change. And then Carolina's transition game is just one of the best in the league. And I think, you know, there were times I think when that third pair got exploited as well with some of the speed of Aho and Teravainen and you know, those types of high-end players that they had. You know, they just weren't able to contain them and really get them to play their type of game. And although they were able to do a good job on the penalty kill, I thought 5-on-5 as that game went on, Carolina's skill and speed and just depth maybe separated a little bit.
So, C-Mace, what would be the best adjustment at this point? Is there an adjustment? Is the lineup, you know, something that can significantly help the Preds if they went to more skill maybe or change the third pairing? What would you say the best next move here is for John Hines?
Well, I think they're going to obviously evaluate. I suspect there will be some changes just to see how that first game went. There's probably, like I said, there's probably more special teams than everybody expected. Each team had, I think, 4 if I'm not mistaken. But I think, you know, if it's going to be like that, and if that's something that you're going to see, I think, you know, Ellie Tolvanen's a guy that would probably be first up and, you know, a difference maker, obviously, on the power play with his shot. So I think maybe Tolvanen was playing the best hockey down the stretch, and that's likely why the lineup decision was made not to start him. But he's a guy that, you know, could obviously have could have helped on the power play. And then, you know, I thought the third pair, as I said, especially in Carolina, because you don't have the matchup control. You get last change. So, you know, Carolina really was able to dictate who they put out against that third pair. And I think sometimes the speed was just a little too much for them. But you could maybe predict a change on that pairing, too. I mean, you have Fabro and Benning, who I thought Benning was playing really good, you know, the last couple months of the season, really solid, a little quicker, not as big or strong, but he can hold his own in that area. And then Dante Fabro, probably the, you know, the most skilled of the four players that would be in the lineup there. So he's an option as well.
See, Mace, obviously a pretty tough spot for Saros on that first goal by Jordan Staal that gave the Canes a 2-1 lead. First off, you'd like to see one of Ekholm, Josi, or Johansson put a body on Staal and take him out of the play. But you're also, if you're Saros, you're trying to take away the pass on the backside too, and left a little bit of the net open. A great shot by Jordan Staal on that play as well. Just from a goaltender's perspective, what's that like when you know you've got a guy that's got a tough angle shot, that it's going to have to be a perfect shot to beat you, but you've also got somebody streaking down the back door as well and trying to take away that middle of the ice? What's that position like as a goaltender, and how tough is it not to try to cheat the other way?
Well, you know, it was kind of a unique situation, because I know exactly what Saros was thinking on that one. He thought, you know, the puck kind of got away from Staal, so he had to extend, and you know, he lost the puck for a second. So, you know, you percentage-wise, you're thinking, well, he's just going to grab it. He's not going to be in a good shooting position. He's going to try to hit the guy going, you know, streaking down the middle for a backdoor pass or whatever. So, and that's kind of how it looked. And Staal, I think, realized once he got that puck that he actually had more time than, you know, he probably should have, especially after losing it. And then Saros completely turned. So he was cheating to get ready to push to the middle of the ice to try to take away that backdoor option. But then Staal just had enough time, and he positioned his body, and he made a great shot. But, you know, and that's, as a goaltender, you look at that goal and you know exactly what, you know, you should have done. Every goal, no matter, you know, sometimes we'll say on air, you know, Saros had no chance or this or that. But when you're a goalie, you think you should stop every single puck, no matter if it's the nicest play that you let in. And that's one, though, that I think he would definitely like back. You know, you're trying to gather all the information that's put forth in front of you and then anticipate, you know, what's going to happen on the play. And he, you know, he anticipated wrong there and left a lot of net. And Staal did make a beautiful shot, but Saros was almost already moving towards the pass. So that was a tough one, but you got to credit Staal for an amazing play.
Chris, that Granlund line has been so big for this team over a long stretch here, and a big part of why this team is in the postseason. Did not see much from them last night. What did you see from them? Would you consider, I know it's very early, it's one game, but maybe changing something up there?
You know, I think I agree with what you said about being one game. There's a lot that goes into this. I mean, you have an 8-day break, you know, you have a bunch of practice time. You know, you kind of have to recapture that feeling that you had at the end of the season, and you know, you're practicing. It's not like you're playing games and you're on a roll. It's something that I think you need to kind of let breathe. You know, I think if it continues to kind of feel that way in game two, I think that's when you can make adjustments. You know, to a line that has really been a main staple and been extremely valuable to the Preds down the stretch. I think you don't just, you know, start shuffling lines around right now. Obviously, he could if he chose to, but I think they'll give him another opportunity. And the bottom line is, you know, when you're looking at the series and it's, you know, that emotional roller coaster that you go through, you go down to Carolina, you want to split. You obviously want to win both games, but, you know, you also have to be realistic about it. And it's a tough place to win. And I think, you know, if you start juggling the lines and get guys thinking about who they're playing with and that type of thing, I think that could cause a little bit of a distraction instead of saying, all right, boys, we're going to give you another shot here. you know, you guys were great down the stretch. Let's see if we need you guys. If we're going to beat the Carolina Hurricanes, we're going to need you guys to play at the level that you're playing at, you know, the last 2 months of the season. So I don't expect any changes there, but again, I could be wrong.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and brought to you by Coleman Tractor and by Smoky Mountain Tops as well. C-Mace, Jofa reunited last night, the top line, Arvidsson coming back into the fold as well. What did you think of Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson's performance in Game 1?
I thought they were good. I thought they were probably the best line, to be honest with you. I thought, you know, especially at the start of the game, I thought they were better at the start. I thought they were able to, you know, play a heavy game. I thought Johansson was engaged early, and Forsberg, I thought he looked pretty good all game. And Arvidsson, I thought there were some moments, he had some good moments with his you know, his hustling ability, and it looks like he's getting to the net pretty hard. So I think that's a line that they're obviously they're really going to need to step up. But I thought Phil looked really good. I thought Johansson might have tailed off a little bit at the end of the game. Wasn't quite as noticeable. And, you know, you need him, especially in the faceoff circle, to be dominant and to try to contribute in that department too. And Carolina is one of the best faceoff teams in the league. So that's a battle that they definitely won that helped them last night. But I thought Jofa was good. I thought they were the best line probably for the team.
Any surprise at all, C-Mace, in how Carolina responded to the physicalities? I thought the first period was a great period, and it was an even period, but it was also – there was a lot of message sending, I felt like, a lot of big hits. I thought Carolina really responded to that. And I know the Preds, you know, that's how they want to play, but I guess – were you surprised at all or impressed at all with how Carolina got into that and you know, established themselves as well?
No, I was impressed. And I wasn't surprised because I know that, you know, Rod Brindamore is that type of player, and they take on that type of hard-working mentality no matter what the situation. And I expected it, to be honest. It's game one. Everybody's ready to go. Carolina's the favorite. They've got to come out. They're playing in their home arena. That doesn't surprise me that they were able to do that. But, you know, if this series is going to be long, I think that that's when you're going to see the Predators sway in that department, if they can do it. I mean, it's not easy to get Carolina to play that game and to keep the game that way because of their skill level. And they are one of the best, most talented teams in the league. So it's tough to keep a team that good into that type of hockey for 60 or 60 plus minutes. But I think if the Preds can, you know, extend this series and turn it into a long series, I think you'll see that physicality advantage shift towards the Predators. But the first couple games, and especially at home for Carolina, you know, I expect them not to back down. And they didn't. You know, they did a good job going toe-to-toe with the Preds in that department.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor and by Smoky Mountain Tops. C-Mace joins us every week here at Tuesday at 8:30. C-Mace, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Absolutely. You as well. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Predators. Get your thoughts on Game 2. Who's in? Who's out of the lineup for Game 2? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Was it difficult to put this together, and did you consider that maybe it was, I don't know, too heavy of a lineup going into this game?
So, guys, look, we came in as 2-2 going in the third period, and you have to make lineup decisions. You know, back to Jared's question, you know, we were physical. It was hard. It was a hard-fought game. It's 2-2 going in the third period, and, you know, you look at a couple of goals, they're breakdowns in the goals. You know, one of them's the turnover. They come back in. It's a D-zone coverage goal, so... I think when you look at those situations, it's, you know, we can talk all about the lineup we want, but we played physical, we played hard. It was a competitive game, and we didn't find a way to win one. So as we've said, we're going to be able to make lineup decisions that we want. But, you know, as we've gone all year long, it hasn't been who's in or who's out. It's how we've played. And today we didn't play well enough to win. I think when you look at the lineup as it's gone through, we played hard, but we have to stay out of the penalty box. Interference, trip, high stick, holding, and two unsportsmanlike line conducts at the end. So it didn't have anything to do with that.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the game last night, a game one loss for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes, discussing the lineup. Now, Joe, I hear him talking there about the lineup changes, saying it's 2-2 heading into the third period, and then there are some breakdowns that lead to some goals, and he is absolutely right about that. My counter argument to that, though, would be, especially on that third goal by Niederreiter, who was on the ice and who is in the lineup leads directly to the breakdowns. You've got Eric Gudbranson and you've got Ben Harper out there as well. Harper comes up, makes a bad decision at the blue line. He gets torched on the outside. Gudbranson's late getting over. So you basically got two defensemen trying to take away a pass and a shot, and neither one of them are taking away a pass or a shot. And Saros somehow makes a save on that play, and then you got five guys standing around watching Niederreiter scores. So I hear what John Hines is saying there, and he is right. It largely has not mattered who's been in the lineup for the Predators during their stretch. They won 20 out of 28 to get in the playoffs. They've been able to do it with different lineups. But I did look at that lineup last night on that third D pair and some of the decisions made in the bottom six and think to myself, man, you better hope that they don't get caught out in space, because if you do, you're going to get in a track meet, and Eric Gudbranson and Ben Harper not prepared to handle a track meet with Carolina. So, look, I hear what John Hines is saying. I don't think he's necessarily wrong that it hasn't mattered who's been in there, but I can tell you at least one goal that happened last night that it absolutely mattered who was in the lineup, and that was Eric Gudbranson and Ben Harper.
Right. So if it's Fabro and Benning, is it markedly different? Maybe. Maybe it is. I mean, those guys are in the lineup. I mean, look, I feel like Hines has a different opinion of Gudbranson than you do.
I
feel confident in saying that. This is like, I'm trying to think of Eric Gudbranson is to you who like who would be like Jared's like most hated player. Like you are.
I'm sure he's a great
guy. You are very. Yeah, right. Sure. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Honestly, man, I was so ready to come in here today and say, did you see the poke check from Gudbranson? That was a heck of a play. He did make a couple nice plays.
He did.
They went size. Hines went size, obviously, there. Those guys are both huge and gave up something in return. I feel like, you know, your third defense pairing is – that happens a lot, right? You
sure.
get caught and you're in trouble. But that was a direct example of that particular decision not working out. I would think that there'd be something different there. I would think Tolvanen would be in the lineup too in game two, although I don't know that I'm convinced of that. It really comes down to some things we don't know, which is, how lingering is the injury, or how much is that still affecting him? How much does that have to do with how he's looked since he came back? And then just how John Hines looks at it in terms of, okay, still the goal here is to play a physical brand of hockey and force them into playing it too. But in the meantime, gosh, it'd be good to have a chance to score on the power play at some point. But if you can't set up, who cares anyway?
Yeah.
You know, you can keep going around and around with this stuff. It's going to be really interesting to see where he goes.
Well, let me just say this. The lineup's going to look different in game two. I mean, I don't really see any way that they're going to come back with the same lineup in game two after what just happened in game one. I think there will be some changes. I'm just fascinated to see, like, if Tolvanen's in there, where is he going to play? Like, Chris Mason joined us in the last segment, said that the Johansson line was probably the best line for the Predators. I would agree with that. I still didn't think they were as good as they need that line to be, and I didn't think Arvidsson was anywhere near as noticeable as they need him to be if he's going to play on that line. So if Tolvanen's coming in, do you put him on that top line and move Arvidsson down to the third line? Do you take Matthew Olivier out and moves Janot back down to the fourth? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And honestly, Joe, I got to say, like, I do wonder if this continues going the way that it is right now, and Matt Duchene is barely playing 5-on-5. He's got 7 minutes 5-on-5, 10 minutes total in the game. Like, is there a point where he's a healthy scratch? Like, it's obvious that John Hines does not fully trust him out there. Does there come a point in this series, if it continues this way, where Matt Duchene is a healthy scratch? That's not something that I really entertained heading into this series. Watching that game unfold the way it did last night, that's something that's starting to creep into my mind about whether or not he could be a healthy scratch. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'm not going to totally remove that off the table.
Well, I think that'd be a mistake. it'd also be a kind of an indication of where things are probably going here.
Yeah.
With the Preds and Matt Duchene, you know, if they can go in that direction, of course, but I think that'd be a mistake. I mean, one of their two goals he created with a really nice play. And I think I think that you'd rather see him have more opportunities than fewer so that this team can generate more offense. But look, if he's not playing the way that Hines has set, he set a bar, he set a standard, made it very clear, and in particular with his forwards on all the different things they need to do for this team to play the kind of style it needs to play to win. Yeah, if he's flat out not doing that, well, then again, you're going to have a problem. But I look at this lineup, and this is why I think I'd throw Tolvin in there too. Any players you have on your side who can make plays on their own, who can come in and generate some offense for you, I think that's going to be an increasing priority here, because I just don't know how you're going to realistically slow that team down the way you want to. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll come right out in game two and the first period will be replicated for three periods Wednesday night and they can win a 2-1 game. But to me, I think you're going to end up erring on the side of more skill to try to keep up.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. David text in, what about Rocco? He just makes things happen out there. Another person on the text line suggesting that Rocco comes in place of Victor Arvidsson because Rocco has more speed. Look, I don't envision them taking Arvidsson out of the lineup at this point. I think they're going to wait and see what he looks like, trying to get back up to full speed as this series goes along here. I don't know. What do you think's more likely? Do you think it's more likely Tolvanen's back in there or that Rocco comes in? He looked pretty good in the last game against Carolina the regular season. He does have speed that Tolvanen doesn't have. He also is not nearly the weapon on the power play that Elie Tolvanen could be as well.
Yeah, and he doesn't bring the sandpaper that obviously is a priority for Hines. Look, I don't hate it. Again, 2 years ago, he's their best forward. He makes things happen. He does have more burst right now than Arvidsson based on what we saw last night. So, I mean, I think you have to consider him as a possibility, but it just, I would still not think that he would get in there. I mean, gosh, last night on the Bally Sports graphic, he didn't even get on the list of scratches, poor guy.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of them. You know, there are a lot of tough choices here. Richardson, Cousins, a lot of different ways you go. I think you can make a case for Rocco. I don't think that's where it's going to go.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brandon from Columbia texting in. I don't want to see the Jofa line. It's not what it used to be. Look, I think there is something to that. Like that, the line is not as dangerous as it was in years past. I mean, I don't think there's really any way to deny that at this point. I mean, that was unquestionably not only the top line for the Predators, but, I mean, Joe, they had a stretch there for about a year, year and a half, where they were one of the top lines in the NHL, much less the Predators. I mean, every statistical measure that you want to break down, they were one of the top five lines in the entire league, and that's just not the case anymore. So, look, I don't know how much patience John Hines is going to have with it. I thought they were okay in game one. I'd not be surprised at all if they come out in game two and that line is together once again. But they've got to find a way to take their game to a different level. Like, you don't have the luxury in this series against Carolina to hang around and wait on that Jofa line to make a difference. They've got it. They're in a position with the skill set that they have, and with the rest of this lineup in this matchup, you've got to get production out of Jofa on a nightly basis if they're going to be together.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was worth a look, and they did some good things. But I would really think about a Duchene or a Tolvanen with Forsberg and Johansson.
Yep.
I think that, again, Duchene, though, you've got to be committing to, like, playing Duchene more and feeling like he can handle that. And then, you know, with Tolvin, and obviously he's been up with those guys a lot. If he comes back in, that would be a natural spot for him. But maybe you're right. Maybe they'll try it another game. That's not the problem for me. Again, one game. So we overreact to one game. but I want to see way more from the Grandin line than we saw last night.
102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. When we come back, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for our weekly chat with him on all things NFL. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.